You hear me?
I can hear you.
All right.
How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, are you awake?
I had no choice but to be awake.
Did she leave or is she still there?
No, my company left. I went to a barbecue. A bunch of us got together for a barbecue. So a lot of people came into town.
Gotcha.
To do it.
Nice.
Well, it's nice to have you guys both join, because Chris and Mike aren't available. I know that Mike is he's on vacation at Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, they're just flying in because Barb just texted me that they just got, I think they have a layover.
Oh, okay.
They're traveling back. But they're at a seafood place right now.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what Chris was doing. I think he was just
the lawn again. He had to do the lawn.
Maybe the lawn. I don't remember. I'm not sure. But so I figured we could try to still do one. And Paul's been reading a lot of older stuff lately. So some of the stuff he's been reading has been dear to both of our hearts, Daryl. So I figured, well, why don't we get Paul on here? He can talk about some older books.
Yeah, I've been talking to you guys about some of this stuff too, to kind of get different perspectives. So it'll be cool to talk to you guys about it in a actual conversation, not just text.
Yeah, sure.
Are you recording too, Daryl? My recording should be going, but I haven't used this a whole lot, so I just want to make sure we got it back up.
Mine goes as soon as I'm on.
Okay, cool.
Just pulling up the one I'm going to do, because I'm going to cover She-Hulk, Volume 1.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. I almost picked a Sensational She-Hulk issue, which I've never read any of it before, but I picked something else. So that would have been funny.
Mine is the first time that Tony Stark, as Iron Man, faced the She-Hulk.
Oh, nice.
This is their first time meeting and fighting.
Do you want to cover yours now? Get right into it or no?
Yeah, sure. This is the writer of this is David Anthony Kraft. The penciler is Mike Vosburgh. Back then, the editors were Joe Duffy and Al McGrone, and the inker was Chick Stone. And this was basically like right after when She-Hulk was first turned into She-Hulk. She wasn't the fun-loving Jennifer Walters She-Hulk that we know now. This was a Hulk who, when she got angry, she, just like her, you know, her cousin, she would turn into She-Hulk. But her thing was, she was more like the gray She-Hulk. I mean, the gray Hulk, meaning that she had most of her mind and her mental faculties, but there was always that anger because it amped up her aggression.
Daryl, which one was this? Because Allie came in here, my daughter. Did you say it's number one or?
No, issue six. This is issue six.
Savage She-Hulk.
Yeah, Savage She-Hulk.
Okay. I got it. Yep. I was just looking.
And she's wanted for murder because there was a fake robot guy who they set her up. Basically, they set her up. Like when She-Hulk went to confront the villain, they blew him up, and it was a robot, not the real person. But into the cameras, it looks like She-Hulk, you know, ripped the guy apart. So you have Iron Man, who, as Tony Stark, he's somebody in his job was went missing, and the wife went to him and asked for his help because no one would help her, and she worked for Stark, and of course he. Now that he's Iron Man, he works for the little guy. You know, he cares about the little guy now. So he decided to go and check it out and see what was going on. So all that kind of, like, you get those little points, everything kind of comes together. And at the same time, you have Jennifer, who is trying to control it, because she can't control it when she changes into She-Hulk. When she gets too excited, it just sets her off. So she's trying to do that. She's a prosecutor at the same time. So she's actually trying to prosecute Stark. So that was a funny thing where she's like, you know, like when she met Tony for the first time, she's like, I know you, you know, like I'm coming after you. I know that you're the, you know, you're running some unsafe business practices over there and there's some things going on and I'm going to shut you down, Stark, because I know who you're working for.
Originally, she was pretty much, like you said, exactly like the Hulk.
Yeah.
And that she couldn't control when she turned into the Hulk and such. Yeah, because, I mean, I didn't start reading the knowing the She-Hulk until she was, I think she was in the Avengers at the time, like in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just, like, always She-Hulk. Yeah, so that's the only way that I ever read her.
Yeah, because they didn't, like, back then, they didn't really care about making it different or whatever. They didn't even really develop characters that were kind of like a kind of a, not a ripoff, but just kind of they were based on, you know, the male version of, mm-hmm. of the character. So her deal was kind of the same, but didn't they little by little they kind of changed her as it went on. But they did make it that she wasn't like the dumb Hulk, like she wasn't that type of Hulk. But it went into her aggression, and I think what I like about the new series that's going on right now is that it kind of calls back to the old version of She-Hulk, where She-Hulk is basically all of Jennifer Walters kind of, she was a shy kid, like she, all her aggression and her, you know, anything that's, she kind of held in all of her emotions, like her cousin did, you know, like she never really dealt with her pain or whatever. So when she held it in, when she becomes the Hulk, it just all that comes out. So all that aggression comes out, but when she kind of can deal with it, when she's mentally in a place, she's in a good place, that's why you have the She-Hulk that could be cool, and she likes to flirt, and she likes to have fun, and she's a, you know, she's kind of aggressive, but not mean, you know, like she's a fun-loving girl, you know, that kind of thing, when she's mentally, you know, in a good place. But when she's not, that's when you get the very, very angry and spiteful She-Hulk. And that's what we deal with now, especially in the early, I think probably to the first 10 issues or something, that you kind of got that.
Mm-hmm.
So the battle between... Yeah, it's a great book. And the battles between, you know, it's just fun. I always have a fun time, like, when you see two heroes fighting, when it's not all the time. This is like a special misunderstanding thing. And it's cleared up in the issue, you know, like she basically, you know, tells Tony, because he thinks he can fight her the same way he fights the Hulk, because the Hulk is not as smart. So he tries to get her to, like, ram him and all this kind of stuff, and she moves out of the way because she figures out what he's doing, and she grabs onto him, and she basically tricks him. She's like, if I can survive a fall, I'll make you fall, but you won't survive it. I will. So she basically won. She won the fight, and then he had to kind of concede and let her talk, and then she told him, I know where the body is, the robot body, and if you can find it, then that proves her innocence, and that's exactly what she did. But you come to find out, though, what I didn't expect is that the person that was missing, the husband, he was the one actually a part of a conspiracy to steal parts and stuff. But Tony didn't want to tell the wife that, because the wife didn't know this, that he was taking money from the company. So he lied and just said that he was a victim of a mobster. So that was Tony's kindness, you know, like, to do that.
Now, what made you decide to pick this one up?
It flipped up on Comixology, Marvel Unlimited. Because sometimes, you know how they do, they don't actually start. Everything is not put up in order. Like, they'll put up... They put up Dan Slott She-Hulk, of course. They'll put up John Byrne She-Hulk. Like, they'll get those done. And now, like, now recently, they're starting to put up the Savage She-Hulk, which is the first volume of She-Hulk. The first stories we've ever gotten of She-Hulk as a solo character. So they've been... And so I looked at it, and when I saw... you know, Iron Man's face on it, being an Iron Man fan, I thought, you know what, let me read this. It's been a while since I've read it, and I don't even remember it well. So I said, let me just read it. Just nice. Kicks, see what the deal is. And it was fun. It's back when you can just read one issue. It was a fun one-issue thing. He went back home. you know, she went on back to doing her thing, fighting crime and trying to control her, you know, changes, you know, and all that kind of fun stuff. And that's it. That's all it was. No big deal.
I've always been a fan of She-Hulk for some reason, but I haven't read like any of her solo stuff, and that's something that I need to get
it's
on.
It's fun to see her go through the change. Like at first, they didn't know what to do with her, but you know, eventually they started to you know, other writers would come on and they'd be like, let's change it up. You know, like let's not have it where she's just a repeat of the Hulk, the male Hulk. Just do something different. Let's flip it a little bit and have fun with it. And that's what they've been doing. I eventually want to like probably start rereading the John Byrne Hulk. You know, now and then when I get.
Well, see, that's how I am. Is that I've never read it, and I mean, we both, you know, I think all three of us now, you know, really like John Byrne. So for the fact that I've never read any of that run is kind of unbelievable to me. So
yeah, that is just it is surprising that you've never read any of the issues.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to pick some of those.
Yeah, you better
I'll
get
be
on that.
A trade or something. Yeah. Very cool. Paul, did you want to go next, or you want me to?
Yeah, sure. So I picked a couple of different things to talk about, so I wasn't exactly sure the format or whatever, and Daryl just kept on telling me to shut up and be on the podcast.
Because there is no format. That's the format. This is Mike, man. Mike don't do format.
So I was just going to kind of generally talk about like Claremont X-Men at first, but then when you were saying pick a couple of things, so I wanted to kind of narrow in on one issue of Uncanny X-Men. Talk about that, because that is something like I've always had a much harder time getting into older comics, not because like I don't think they're good or anything, but just the reading style is a lot different, the art style is a lot different, like it's a lot more laborious to read it because the art isn't as clear as it is nowadays, where they could tell so much of the story visually so quickly.
And in every other panel, they'll tell you exactly what you're
seeing. And that's the thing. I know this is not a retro story, but that is the thing. I was talking about that yesterday with comics. That is one of my issues with Secret Empire.
Oh, well, what is
that? He over-explains the art. Uh-huh. I really think throughout that series that I've been reading it, he over-explains everything going on and doesn't let the art tell the story. And I think that that's something they
Secret
do now.
Secret Empire is something going on now, right? Or is that
that's current. But that's what I'm saying, as opposed to the art. You know, there's some runs back in the day where they would just let the artist tell that story and not try to, you know, like have to explain it to you because, you know, they trust the art enough.
I think that's part of what made it harder for me to read older stuff like this, where they do have to tell you what's going on to an extent because the art is only so clear because of the limitations of the medium. And nowadays, if you get that where the writer is explaining everything that's going on, it's horrible. It's tedious. I can see what's going on, you know? I don't need you to tell me what I'm looking at.
Right.
But it's not that way when you're reading these older books that they're printed on newsprint and just the whole process with the art limits the clarity of it. So you do need some explanation for everything. So I finally, I had, my local shop here, right by where I live now that I go to now, he'll buy collections and stuff, and like he'll sell some stuff for really cheap just because he doesn't have a lot of space and he just wants to move it. And he had, four volumes, the first four Essential Uncanny X-Men. These are like now the Essential ones I think are nicer. They're colored, they're printed on nicer paper. These were just like black and white basic.
Yeah, I got a ton of those, Paul.
Yeah.
And they're great for just reading.
They're great to be able to just read it. Yeah, I mean, he was selling them for only $4 a pop, too. So I picked up the first four volumes of Uncanny, which started with Giant Size.
Yep.
And then I also picked up, he had a couple volumes of Wolverine, which I haven't gotten to those yet. I'm on the third volume of Uncanny right now. But I started reading it, and I mean, right away you start out, I almost picked Giant Size for the issue I wanted to talk about. But I didn't because I realized Claremont doesn't write Giant Size.
No.
But Giant Size introduces just so many new characters. And when I first read it and opened it up, and right away they introduced Nightcrawler, who's one of my favorite X-Men characters. So right away I was like, okay, this is cool. Like I'm seeing history And, like, you get that right off the bat. You know, you, so you get, who do you get introduced to that? Nightcrawler, Storm, Colossus, is there anybody else?
Yeah. Thunderbird.
Thunderbird, yeah.
Yeah, and then he's dead soon, so whatever.
Thunderbird matters, man.
40-year-old spoiler alert.
He matters.
But, yeah, so then I looked at issue 94, which is the first one Claremont writes, I believe. Well, he wrote one issue before that, I guess, looking on Marvel Unlimited, but... I didn't want to do 94 because he's just getting started and he hasn't really got the character development going yet. And that's what makes Claremont so much better than a lot of stuff, is he really develops these characters. I was telling Daryl before that I love Storm from reading this, and I never got that much character out of Storm with reading the stuff that's come out over the last, like, I don't know, 10 or 15 years.
No, because once they hit a plateau after, I think, after Jim Lee and them kind of forced Claremont out and they hit that plateau... with those characters, they pretty much, some characters got developed, like overly developed, like Wolverine. Like, they, you know, every ounce of what Wolverine is, right? To the point where the Man of Mystery is done. you know everything. But then there were other characters like Storm where they just left her in that one. Once she got to that spot she was left in, she never moved past it.
Like, yeah, she's just kind of like a stoic leader now. And even if she's not the leader of the X-Men at a given time, she's always a figurehead. But she's always just kind of quiet and stoic.
And she goes back and forth with dating the same dude and then breaking up with the same dude and then dating the same dude again. That's it. That's all you can
do. I'll actually go further and say that that actually, not only is it just, you know, they don't seem to know what to do rather than retread the same relationships that Claremont did years ago. But I think that, to your point, Paul, what you were saying before in writing styles, I think that modern-day writing styles, and this is just generally, obviously there are, you know, great exceptions, but just in general, I think they don't lend themselves to this deep character development that they had back, you know, in the 80s and earlier.
Well, now it's so... Now it's at the point where, because I think what hurts it is that there's so many restarts, you know, so many restarts of books.
Yeah, you look at Marvel and DC, and it's all events now. That's how they sell it.
That is how they sell.
But now it's at the point, but now I think, like, especially with DC, they're getting the point. There is so much development in Superman right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's been more development in the first year of Superman currently from Rebirth than there's been in Superman for the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years.
And not to get too far off topic, but that's exactly what the major difference that I'm finding for some of the Rebirth titles. Superman's the best example. They just had, what, a 2 or 3... issue story where they just visit Washington D.C. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, there literally are there's no battles at all.
No battles at all. Fights. It's characters reevaluating while you're there. And I know
it's
people
beautiful.
Don't.
It's,
right, even
it
with
a beautiful story.
Yeah, I know. And even with Mike not liking Tom's Batman, put that aside, whether you like it or not, he is going in and dealing with all that content, all those things that have happened to Batman have happened, and it has an effect on him, just like with Superman. All the things that have happened to Superman has had an effect on him, and all of Tom's run of that has been him dealing with what's been going on before, like, you know, like the death,
Daryl,
the loss, of, what?
I got Kid. Chills reading a friggin' Batman book about Kite Man.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm reading this thing about just some random hood.
Yeah,
and. Oh. 3/4 of the way through, I'm like, holy shit, this is not some random guy, this is Kite Man.
And they did this with Hawkeye.
Let's rein in this Tom Gaskis fest and get back to X-Men. That's what
you don't run this. This is not a Nerdy Legion thing. We could do what
we
want here.
I got nothing against Tom King or Batman. I don't have any of those feelings. I don't care if other people don't like him.
We don't need you. It goes with what we're talking about. I'm going to take it even further. When they did Hawkeye with Matt Fraction, his whole point with Hawkeye is to reevaluate all the stuff that he went through years ago. Like, now it's a new thing because they haven't done it in so long that when they do books like Vision, Hawkeye, even Moon Knight, even though
those are the books that I've been loving because they're really digging into the character. And, you know, Tom New King's Hulk. Vision was great. Moon Knight, with everybody that did that, I stopped reading it. Well, I read a little bit of when Jeff Lemire took over doing Moon Knight, and that was just kind of, I need to read it in like trade format so I got the whole story in front of me. But I read the whole run before that. That's, I think it started off with Ellis and it went through a couple different writers, but like I was really digging that.
You had Hulk, you have the new Hulk, I mean, which is She-Hulk, but it's basically getting into her, you know, dealing with all the past terrible things that have happened to her over the years and kind of like dealing with that pain and horror. Like, so she's getting character development. So you're getting it in these solo books that appear to be special, but they're really not because they've been done before with Claremont, but only Claremont was able to do it. He was allowed to have that time to do it in his own book.
Yeah, it's, you know, like nowadays you got to have the big books that are the that are just the general draw. People want their safe books that are what they expect, and that's it. Yeah. You know, the books that are events, that are crossovers, that are whatever. But you know, both publishers publish so many books that you can have that, and then you can have a lot of other books that really dig into those characters.
Right.
You know, so like if you're gonna have, I mean, you know, X-Men has a lot of books. If you're going to have an X-Men book that is just like that's the meat of the story, the action of what's going on in the world of the X-Men, but then you have all these parallel books that run along with it where they can really get more into the individual teams.
Well, this is when it was just uncanny. I mean, he was doing this stuff in
uncanny. That's what was so different about back then is they had to be... Yeah. The quality had to be so... Well, I mean, X-Men was a failing title until that. You know, they were just reprints up until they did Giant Size and relaunched it.
Right.
And he took it and he made it something that was a failure. Mm-hmm. And he made it something that was just the hottest shit out there. Yep. I didn't want to go too early on because I wanted to get into some of his character development. Mm-hmm. So I thought about it a little bit and I chose to talk specifically about issue 101, which is the earliest issue I own. It's the first Phoenix. Yeah. So I busted that out and kind of took a flip through it and refreshed myself on the story a little bit. But so the X-Men had gone into space to defeat Stephen Lang and his robotic Sentinels.
Right.
And then so they're trying to figure out how to get back to Earth. And all their systems go to shit and whatever. So they're, you know, we're all going to die. But Jean says, I'll use my telekinesis to protect us, and I'll pilot the ship back to Earth. You guys go in this, like, protected chamber or whatnot, you know? So doing that, they know she's going to die. That's what they know.
Whoever does that is a dead person. Yeah. They can't survive that. Yeah,
but she ends up breaking through all the psychic shields that Professor X had set up in her to help her keep her powers under control.
Right.
And that's what unleashes the Phoenix. And I was flipping through the issue, and she pops out of the water like, look at me, I'm the Phoenix. And then, like, collapses. So she's still having this big struggle with her power, where it's kind of like she has these flare-ups of her power, where it's...
Well, it's amazing what we get. It's amazing what happens later when it's retconned.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that stuff yet. Yeah. I know I've brushed back and forth over that stuff in my reading before, but it was before I had a bigger picture of X-Men stuff when I was kind of first getting into comics again. But so Phoenix is Jean Grey and her powers combined with this other power. In the original, is that what it is, or is this just all her? Is the Phoenix
in
being
the original version? It was supposed to be along with the Phoenix Force, they have combined.
And so the Phoenix Force is still an external force, right?
Right. It's an external force that combined with her, it combines with the strongest, I guess, with, you know, the strongest telepaths over the course of the universe. I mean, that's how big.
Yeah, I thought that's what it was, but then when you mentioned the retcon, I was wondering if my recollection of it all was screwed up by that. But
no surprise, the retcon is just basically saying, because the whole thing is, because this is when it goes to how what happens in comics, because people like these characters, they didn't want this character to die, right? Mm-hmm. They wanted to be able to bring her back, and bring her back without... She did something very horrible as a in that entity, and so they wanted to kind of be like, how can we bring her back without punishing her for doing the bad things that happened when she was part of the Phoenix? So the way we would do it is, we would just have it that it wasn't her, This was a, it took the essence of her and duplicated it and left her in a cocoon to heal, and what you see shoot out the water is the duplicate with the same feelings, emotions, memories, and all of that of her from that moment.
So that's how they write. Okay, wait, when do they actually do that retconning? I haven't read that.
What? Was it 286? Well, it's more X Factor 1, but it was like in a Fantastic Four.
286.
Avengers issue. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a 286 where they find the cocoon, and then it launches the new X Men book, which was the original X Men, again, the X Factor book. Which is great stuff. I mean, great emotional stuff. I mean, her, you know, when Cyclops finds out that Jean's alive, he's married with a kid, you know, and the pain that goes through his face, even with the glasses on, there's a scene where he's holding the phone and just the tears coming down his face when they tell him, you know, that she's alive. Like, that's a good, it's so, comics have always been soap opera stuff, you know, soap opera comics, that's mm-hmm. with superheroes and punching, right? That's always been the case. Like, those scenes were major back in the day. I mean, that was emotional moments where it's like, he's in love, he's still in love with her, he never stopped loving this woman, and you find out that she's still alive, and now you're in a marriage with another woman and a child, and you're supposed to be making your way, you're supposed to be, you know, dedicating your the rest of your life to this family, and he can't give up on that love of Jean. He still loves her. He can't get rid of that. There's some devastating consequences that happens because of it. And then we're talking years of story now. This is not something that happens in, like, you know, 12 issues.
You just said 286, right? That's 185 issues later. That's like 15 years almost.
Yeah,
something like that.
This is how broad it is. This is like years of story coming with this. Like, you're when you finally get to Inferno and stuff that happens from there, it's like when you finally kind of get what's going on and what happens, and you have to be patient. Like, back in the day, you really had to be patient with stories back then, because they
that is for sure.
No Russian. There was no Russian back then with this.
So I just flip him back and forth through the issue a little bit, but so some of the stuff, and this isn't all in this issue, but some of the stuff that I loved. So first of all, in this issue, of course, you see, you know, Scott's angst at Jean's condition. Mm-hmm. I liked it when he kind of grew a little more balls a little later on, but he's a little too quick to just start crying about everything at this time. But you see Wolverine start to be a little less of just a berserker. And you see a little more of another side to him, which I
little by
my
little.
Favorite things, yeah. And they do it real slow.
Yeah.
It's not this issue. I don't recall exactly what issue it is, but there's an issue where Wolverine does something and everybody is surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And basically he says, "You don't know me. Stop thinking you know me."
Right.
You know, and like that, I love that moment, because I mean, up to a certain point, they just. Wolverine is the little animal, and they all shit talk him. They all do, and it's ridiculous.
All the time,
yeah. Nuts, yeah. And finally, he's like, "You don't know me," you know. He's this, you know, little dude with all kinds of power and stuff, and he has mm-hmm. this vicious side, but there's more than one side to him. So here you kind of start to see that. And I love as that gets developed throughout,
and it shows you, Paul, how why he became so popular,
right?
Because he wasn't. A one-dimensional character, but then once he got superpower, popular, he was kind of reduced to that's just all he is.
Like, could you imagine a time where you said, people who read Wolverine now, imagine a time where back then where they would tell you, "Oh yeah, Wolverine got into a fight with the X-Men and Wolverine fought, and Wolverine got hurt because his healing factor, of course, he could take it, but he had to leave the book for about 5 issues because back then when he get hurt." He had to go into a sleeping coma, a healing coma, to survive it, because he could die if he overdid his healing factor. So imagine you saying you're taking Wolverine out of a book, out of the X-Men book, for 5-6 issues.
Mm-hmm.
They'd drive you crazy. There would be an outcry. Like, what do you mean? An editor would probably look at you and be like, "You have lost your mind. You were off that book. I'll get another writer on that book if you tell me some crap like that. You don't take Wolverine out of the book. Are you crazy?"
Hell, in the 90s, they put them in as many books as they possibly could.
Yeah, that's what they used to do back in the 80s. The 80s were, you know, like Claremont put it in a little thing where he's not super, he can heal faster than the average person, but he'd get weak, he would leave and go off for a little while and kind of reevaluate life, go hunting, or he would meet up with an old friend. Like, this is crazy stuff, like go to a bar. There's issues where they're just at a bar talking about all the things that happened in the previous arc. Like, you do that now, and it's like you get pitchforks. Like, what do you mean they're just sitting at a bar discussing tragedies and stuff like that? But that's kind of how you got the Colossus, Nightcrawler, Wolverine trio of friendship there. There's a little ring of those three guys kind of formed a special bond because of their tragedies.
Yeah, and you get stuff out of that, like, you know, you got the fastball special with Wolverine, right, and Colossus, right, stuff like that that's unique with them because mm-hmm. they build these bonds that if you didn't build these bonds that are just the, you know, the stories in a bar, that kind of a thing, you don't get these other elements that come out of it, or right. It feels forced and it feels fake.
I think that's what's forgotten about, like, some of the new Inhumans. And maybe some of the newer X-Men characters is that because it has to be done so quickly, you know, even Bendis has to get stuff done in them 12 issues because they're going to change it into another book later, you know, in a year. So you can't get those kind of issues where you don't get 2 years to form a friendship in a comic book. That's unheard of. You're not going to get that kind of time.
Another thing in this issue that I thought it was in this issue, but then I flipped back and forth and missed it a few times. So, two things. One, this issue is like, it's this momentous, it's the introduction of the Phoenix. By the end of the issue, they're already segueing to the next story, which is something mm-hmm. you see a lot differently nowadays, where just something like the introduction of the Phoenix would be a four issue arc in itself. And right. there would be a crisp beginning and a crisp end, right. and not a lot of segue with it. Mm-hmm. With this one, by the end of it, you're already transitioning into you're going to see Black Tom Cassidy and Juggernaut in the next issue. They've gone to that castle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the parts in it that I like is where Storm's in the castle, and she's like, I need to relax, so she like just ditches her clothes and creates this rainstorm.
I think the first time she ever did that, where she changed clothes through her. Storm was able to change her clothes by repolarizing the unstable molecules. Remember that?
Yeah.
That, Rob? That's special. That was something that wasn't something that was done before.
I do remember in the early days too, she was constantly taking off her clothes to.
Oh yeah, she got nude all the
time. Take you know, a rain shower wherever and whenever she wanted.
That's right, because she's a dirty bird. Because Claremont, that's one thing you learn about Claremont. Claremont is a dirty man. He's a dirty bird. Dirty, dirty man.
Yeah, so that was one of the issues I chose, was that one. And so when I was choosing the issues that I wanted to talk about, I was trying to think about what things have I kind of come across that had the biggest impact on a big change in my comic world, you know? It's like I don't have the time to read just anything I want to, so I got to be a little more selective. So I tend to find something I really love and, like, add something little by little rather than just, like, I read a whole bunch of everything, you know? So X-Men was one of that, like, getting that book and finally starting reading it. Now I'm collecting Uncanny, and I've put together quite a few issues pretty quickly. I got a bunch I'm still working on reading through.
Do you still want those that I talked to you about?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I marked down what ones you have for me, so that way I don't accidentally pick them up elsewhere.
Okay, good.
So like that was a big change for me. So I was trying to think of what else, and I was thinking what issues were kind of big changes, and like what things are big things to me. So it's, you know, like I'm a big Ninja Turtle fan, but that stems back from me being a kid and watching the cartoon. So it's not like there was a comic book that changed my world there. And then stemming from that, I got into Usagi Yojimbo. But, like, I didn't really feel like that. That was kind of just adding on to, like, a pathway I was already kind of on. I thought about it a little bit, and I decided that the other issue I want to talk about was the first issue of Hellboy.
Hmm.
because this opened up just a whole new world for me. I had never read Hellboy, and a while back, when Dark Horse first came over to Comixology, they had a big sale, and I picked up the first six trades of Hellboy for, I think, like $6 each on Comixology. And I read it and just loved it. And I was always waiting for them to have another sale so I could just keep on picking up stuff. They didn't have they kept on having single issue sales, and I didn't want to have some of it in trade and some of it in single issues. And then when this new shop opened up over here by me, they opened with a big collection, and then as the time went on, they kept on having bigger and bigger sales on that, like, initial stuff to try to get rid of it. So I picked up just a ton of Hellboy and DPRD and, like, all that band of stuff for, like, less than $1 an issue. So that got me really hooked on Hellboy. And
did you watch the movie before you read the books, or you did the advice?
I did back in the day, and I vaguely remember watching it, but I wouldn't say by any way, shape, or form that's what made me a fan of Hellboy. It was just kind of this thing that was vaguely there before, you know?
Alright.
So what was the first Hellboy? Like, what was it actually called?
And it wasn't even written by,
It was scripted by John Byrne. It was by Mike McNulty,
exactly.
But it was scripted by John Byrne. So I found that interesting, first of all, because...
Yeah, they had to do that. They kind of had to do that because they weren't confident that people would even give it a shot without...
I'm looking in a database, and I see Hellboy Seed of Destruction. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
By Mignola Byrne and...
Yeah, that's the first. That's the first one.
Yeah.
Yep, so it's, John Byrne scripts it, so he's heavily involved in this, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point, I mean, I knew who John Byrne was, but it's not like I had heavily read John Byrne, so I was kind of interested, too, just to get a little bit of introduction to John Byrne out of this. And Mignola, like, one of the things that's always been really striking to me about Mignola is just his artwork, which, as I've kind of kept my eyes open other places, like seeing a lot of the stuff he's done for DC, you know, covers, issues. Like, I still haven't read it, but I picked up Gotham by Gaslight, which, you know, I'm excited to check that out just because it's Mignola doing it. Mm-hmm. So the first issue here, basically, it tells how Hellboy came about, and then it introduces these frog creatures, which... Looking back, I mean, I had read through, you know, all of... So with Hellboy, there's all the Hellboy stuff, and then BPRD starts up. And Hellboy is kind of like sticking with Hellboy. BPRD is everything before it switches is the Plague of Frogs. Right. So, you know, these frog creatures. And, like, I was kind of surprised to see that, like, right off the bat, that's immediately what happens. This very first issue, Professor Broom... gets killed by a frog creature. And as the, you know, everything keeps going on, they do basically like flashback series. So, you know, Professor Broom is in the comic, but it's going back before this starting point that we have right here. But like right off the bat, just everything is introduced and just you're thrown right into it. A while back, I had started watching the Hellboy movie again because I hadn't watched it, like I said, for years. I watched it before I was a fan of comics at all. Didn't read comics a bit. And, going back and watching a little bit, one of my problems with it is they force in the romantic story with Hellboy and what's her name?
And you're talking about creature.
The pirate
Alice or is it Alice or goddamn name?
Rob, look it up. You got a computer.
I'm ignorant of Hellboy.
I'm trying to think of her name, and it's right on tip of my tongue. I've read all these trades already, and I don't know why. I don't remember.
What are you guys trying to figure out?
In the movie, the Hellboy movie, when they introduce the it's Liz. Liz Sherman.
Yeah,
that was
Liz,
like a regular name. Liz was not important. Like I had watched the movies first. And then I read the comics. Well, I watched the first movie first and then read the comics. And I just thought there was something lacking about the Hellboy movie. And I didn't know, I couldn't put my finger on it because I didn't know it was different from the books until I finally read it. And that's when I got the deal. He was so much more mature. Like, they chose to make him a child in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. And that bothered me. The, like, his... personality in the movie is too immature.
He's a teenager, I would say. He's like a frat boy teenager.
Yeah, and his infatuation with Liz, that's not how it is in the book. And to me, that cheapens something in the book. Because in the book, their relationship is more like brother-sister. Like, he has a deep
They're broken love for her. Children. They're both children of that were born out of pain and loss. And
exactly.
They kind of bonded on that level.
Yeah, so Hellboy has a deep love for her, but it's not a romantic love. It's that kind of bond between them where he loves her more than that kind of love means when it's just this infatuation. So to me, that really cheapened a big part of things.
It did.
That was one of my problems with it. You know, plus the movie, it's taking the story and it's condensing it into something a little bit different. I haven't rewatched the whole thing, so I don't want to do it injustice either.
I rewatched it a couple times. Like, I don't hate the movies, but when you read the source material, the source material is far better than the movies. Because it's just that world is just so vast, and it's so much you could do with it. Like, Hellboy Seeds of Destruction could have been three movies in itself. I mean, if they really wanted to really get into it. Because there is the thing of his origin, which we don't get the full deal with. You know, they don't deal with that till like recently, like everything about it. And then you get the things that's going on with Rasputin and what he wants. I mean, that's like there's a big scope in how they want to destroy the world. Like, and then just the burrow of paranormal research. Like, if you had just got into that, like explaining that whole deal. That could have been most of the movie, like showing Abe and all the different agents and stuff. Like, there's so much they could have done with that, which I hope, and it looks like that's what they're going to do with the new reboot.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this new movie. There's just so many layers to the story of all this Hellboy stuff, and part of the reason I think it is so good and it is so deep is Mignola always had other people working on stuff with him. Like, his name is on everything because he's a part of it, which I think is also important.
To keep
that
it
he
consistent.
Stays a part of it. Exactly,
To keep it consistent.
But you have these other people, like, they have, so there's the Hellboy title proper, and the way Hellboy and all this stuff has been released, like, they've played around with internal numbering and stuff like that, but one of the things that makes it hard to read is that it was released basically as a bunch of, you know, like, miniseries, basically.
Yeah.
So
it
got confusing. So I eventually, instead of trying to continue collecting the individual issues, I got the collections. I got there's six Hellboy library editions that are nice big hardcovers. I got the BPRD Plague of Frogs omnibuses, which carry through the whole BPRD series. And then they have a collection that's BPRD 1946 through 1948. And those are the stories that are going back before some of this stuff. So you get a lot more of Professor Broom and you know, different stuff where they're able to. And Josh Dysart wrote one of those series with Mignola. And I thought that was the best one. And it really showed me Dysart's knack for writing horror stuff. Because Hellboy, if you look at it, if you want to pigeonhole it, it's a horror book. You could say, you know, it's like if you really want to put it into a niche, it's a lot more than that.
But it's funny how all the books that we talked about so far all have the same kind of premise. It's the monsters and the rejects and the weirdos, as they label them. Those are the heroes. Those are the noble heroes in these books. Like, they're the ones that fight the real monsters, and the real monsters are actually the humans.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of times. That's a trope that we get a lot of in comics. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of been, and horror too. Like, they play with that trope too. Frankenstein, he wasn't the monster. He had kindness in him. It was the evil scientist and the evil townspeople that were the real monsters in those stories. But, you know, so it's interesting that that's something that's redone and retold in various forms. Through comics and movies and books and stuff. It's just fun to read.
Yeah, so Hellboy, definitely discovering that and reading it was a big shift in my comic landscape for me. So I've read all, basically up to, you get to the end of the BPRD story and the end of the Hellboy story, and there's basically a big thing happens, and you get Hell on Earth. Hellboy ends up in Hell, and Hell is on Earth. So then the BRD series shifts to BPRD Hell on Earth, and Hellboy shifts to Hellboy in Hell, which there's a lot of the BPRD material after that point. Hellboy in Hell two trades worth of stuff, and that's that's it. So, and you know, more stuff keeps coming, and you have just so many tied in things. You have the Abe Sapien stuff.
Because he has a whole thing of not knowing who he is, and he has to find out his true origins.
So you got a big story there. You got the Lobster Johnson stuff that you got a big story there. They just did a mini series that I haven't gotten the trade for it yet, but it's the Rise of the Black Flame, which is a character.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah,
so I'm excited about checking. I mean, there's just so many things. Witchfinder, you know, and then on top of that, then you go into like, I mean, Mignola's done Baltimore that has like I think 7 volumes out.
Yeah, and Baltimore is basically it's a lot like the Helm the Helsing type of character. Like he goes out and fights the monsters. You know, he's you know, he can't die. The same way they can affect monsters, they don't affect him the same way for whatever reason. And his whole thing is to go after the monster. He's almost like Ahab too. He's even lost some appendages along the way on his journey to stop the evil that's going on.
Yes, that's why I wanted to talk about these two, is they opened a door for me that when you open that door, there's like a whole new world in front of you. You know, X-Men, I've read through 151 is the next issue for me to read. So I've read over 50 issues. I got so many more to go before I even get to the end of Claremont.
Yeah,
I got a lot in front of me.
Well, Rob, what did you pick? You got to talk about some stuff too, man.
Yeah.
What you get?
Well, I wanted Paul to finish his thought, and
this is the end of my thought. Then with Hellboy, same thing. Like I said, I've read through that turning point where you go to Hellboy in Hell and the BPRD Hell on Earth. But all those other things I've mentioned too, like I might have dabbled in a little bit of them, but I've hardly gone down those other veins. So that's what's cool about finding something new like that. Is now, I mean, I'm maybe at the halfway point of figuring out all the Hellboy stuff, and there's just so much more, and I love it all. You know, it's great to find something where you open that door and you have the enthusiasm from the beginning, but you just have all this stuff out in front of you. So that's why I chose those two books.
Well, I just have to say that when you started really getting into and reading Uncanny X-Men, knowing that you were reading so many of these, if not all of them, for the first time, it was just, it's like, oh my God, it's so awesome that like you're actually experiencing and enjoying it, you know, for the very first time. Super, super cool. And you said your last one you read was 151?
That's the next one to read.
Oh, that's the next one. Okay. So
that's what I'm up to.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, that's awesome. You're almost up to the Brood Saga.
Which I tried
to turn you on to, two years ago.
That's the hard thing sometimes when people tell you, and you at least gave me a specific thing to look at, because usually if you ask somebody, they'll say a statement that's just wonderful, like, oh, read the Claremont stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, which is actually true, as you can tell. But
it's all good stuff, but that doesn't help a new reader get into something. You have to be specific. So you were specific, but probably picking a space story wasn't the best intro for me, because that's not really the type of story I usually get enthralled with in the first place.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't know, it's hard to tell. Like, when
are you going
to
reread it now that you're...
Well, that's why you got to cater, you got to ask what the person likes. Like, what is your genre, what is some of your favorite genres? Then you know what to grab out of the Rolodex of your mind. You know which one stories that will have focus on those type of genres.
True.
Exactly, and I had read the Dark Phoenix Saga before, because I had gotten the trade of that, and the Brood story that you're talking about, I think I had probably read a couple issues of it when I was trying to get into it before. But
okay, so you'll reread it when you get to those issues.
Yeah.
And it'll mean more when you reread it after you've read the previous.
Exactly. Dark Phoenix Saga, I got so much more out of it reading it again with knowing what came before it. Exactly. You know, when you narrow something down to just that one little story, sometimes too, it doesn't really do it justice, especially when you look at how stuff was written then, especially with what Claremont did, where, like I said, this issue that introduces Phoenix, it's already rolling on to the next story. Mm. You know, so you have to feel the momentum to really get everything you can out of it.
Right. Yeah, for sure. All right, well, I'll talk I'm going to talk briefly about actually a four-issue arc of Batman that I just recently read. Thursday, I guess, I finished it off. It was Batman number 291 through number 294. And hang on, I got to get the creative team because I don't actually have it in front of me. I know that it was David V. Reed was the writer. Who, Daryl, you might be familiar, but I didn't remember him going back. But I guess he had a little run there before issue 300.
Yeah, he did some stuff like creating Deadshot.
Oh, did he? Oh,
yeah. He did that, and he also he added some upgrades to the Batplane.
And you know what I found with him, just in general, because I started reading at number 263 and started reading upwards, mm-hmm. That he really specialized, at least in these issues that I was reading from 263 up. There are, spans of issues where he fights no costume villain. They're just, they're all, mystery.
Because he comes from the pulp stuff.
Oh, does he?
This writer comes from the pulp era where, there wasn't superheroes.
I had no idea.
Crime.
He did a great job. I mean, it was just, they're very interesting stories, but they're all gangster related or like I said, murder mystery related. But this four issue arc is different, and it is, David B. Reed's the writer, and, John Kalman was the, artist. I'm not real familiar with his name either. But basically, it's a four-story arc entitled "Where Were You on the Night Batman Was Killed?" And what you see is each issue you have one of four villains that claim that they actually were the person that killed Batman.
They've done a thing on this for the cartoon as well.
There was
an issue of the cartoon that was a take on of that, I kill Batman, I'm gonna tell you my story.
Yes, and that's exactly what it was. It was super cool. I mean, it's cheesy to the extent that they set up kind of a courtroom for villains,
right?
And so it was Ra's al Ghul was the judge, of course. Two-Face was the prosecutor. Mm-hmm. I don't remember everyone on the jury. It was a six-panel jury. I know, it was Signal Man, Poison.
It was Spook, Scarecrow, Two-Face, Riddler, Ra's al Ghul, Poison Ivy, Mr. Freeze, the second Mad Hatter, Lex Luthor, Joker, and Catwoman.
Right. So in the first issue, it's Catwoman explaining what happened and how she never, wanted to kill Batman, but through circumstances, she had no choice but to kill him. And at the end, Two-Face, as the prosecutor, proves that's not correct, that she didn't, that she was found not guilty of killing Batman. And the objective is that the villain wants to be found guilty to get the accolades from all the other villains.
Right. Now, this is 1977.
Yeah.
Now, this is how far back they've been playing with the Catwoman, Batman, will they, won't they?
It's true. Because that was, they showed a lot of that, and then at the end it was basically, they were in a situation where it was either her or him. Mm-hmm. She was on a cage that was actually floating up with her and her pet, I think, Cheetah or Jaguar, and as he was trying, because they were on a raging type river, and if he'd been injured, he was trying to pull himself up on the cage, and it was making the cage sink, so she had no choice but to kick his hand off, and thereby killing him. But then they proved that the cage didn't actually float, and her story was not true. The following issue, the Riddler goes through his whole thing, where he said that he blew up Batman with, because dynamite started on fire. And again, Two-Face ended up, he actually, and I don't know if this is true, but proved that dynamite does not blow up when it actually burns. It has to be has to actually have a spark or something. I'm not sure what.
The ignition. It's kind
of
like
that. So I didn't even know if it's true or not. That was pretty interesting. And then the next one was actually Lex Luthor. And that was interesting because his whole deal was that he just wanted to get Superman, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But this was just a byproduct. He didn't care about killing.
That's his obsession. He didn't care about it.
But he wanted to kill Superman, and so he had this whole scheme with a satellite that, like, basically wiped out Batman's, like, his mind, his essence, and downloaded Superman's mind into Batman's body, making him susceptible to more injury, and it was able to kill him. So again, Two-Face proved that he didn't really do it. Right. And then the last issue was 294, where the Joker comes to the stand, and they start going through a thing, and it turns out, yes, he did commit a murder, but what it was this guy that just was obsessed, kind of to the point of being obsessed with Batman. He actually would follow all of the press clippings with everything that Batman did, and then the following night, he would reenact what Batman did at the same location. And apparently he was pretty good because he's able to bypass any security or whatever. And then he would reenact exactly how Batman managed to solve a crime. But what happened in this case is Joker, unknowingly, Joker was actually at a location where Batman took out just a common criminal who was trying to steal some, I believe it was like fur coats from a warehouse. Right. And Joker was
what crimes,
there.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So Joker was there hiding. He was trying to get like a secret stash of money or whatever that he had hidden somewhere there. And so he left. Then Joker came back the next day to do what he wanted to do. And here is the, you know, Batman's imposter reenacting. Joker encounters him and ends up killing him.
Right.
So it turns out that Batman had actually replaced Two-Face all along. They put Two-Face in isolation and out of commission in Arkham, and then he ended up rounding up, you know, the villains, of course. So it was a really cool story. I mean, you know, it is what it is from the time frame, like you said, Derek, right. 70s. It's not like something that feels modern by any stretch, but it was an awesome four-part.
Yeah, it was almost like one of those. It was a cartoon, like I almost had him. Like, you know, like the villain is like I almost had him.
it was a lot of fun to read, and you know, I read the first one like the night before I went to bed, and then I was off the next day. I read all three in succession. It was just a really enjoyable time to just sit there and read those old stories. But I think Paul had to. Had to jump
off.
He had to slip out. So, Daryl, do you have another one that you want to talk about before we...
I read one issue. I didn't even finish the story yet, but it was Mr. Miracle, Volume 1, Issue 6.
Did you hear that hack Tom King is doing a take on him now?
Oh, man, it's terrible.
It's
almost like a YA.
It's
almost like a Young Animal book or something. I don't know.
I probably could just throw mine in the garbage at this point.
I deleted it off my iPad as soon as I bought it.
Did you? Yeah. That's
totally terrible.
First Batman, and now Mr. Miracle.
Now Mr. Miracle is all sad and and angry, you know.
Nope.
Why? How dare he develop this character?
What issue did you say you read?
I jumped to 6.
Uh-huh.
I jumped to issue 6, which is Wait for Got it. I guess that's how you would pronounce it. And it's these names right here tells you how long ago this was done. This was in 72, and before I was even born. And the names of there's a guy called the Funky Flashman who is his manager, right? That's the guy's name. And House Roy, who was his boy.
I see. It's the first appearance of Funky Flashman.
Yeah. And basically, it's like they're on the run still. They're on the run from Apocalypse. They're from they just left Apocalypse. They're on the run. Darkseid, like, repeat. What I like about it is there's a thing with this, and I don't know if Tom is going to get into this because this is one of the issues Tom has picked also to read.
Ah, okay.
He was asking me about some books to read or whatever, and I noticed that this was one of the picks in his collection, was this issue. I didn't read all of the first run of Mr. Miracle. I read the Fourth World stuff, and I've read Walt Simonson's entire Orion run.
Mm-hmm.
I've read those, and I've read like miniseries here and there. But Mr. Miracle was something I've read more of the recent stuff, like with when Grant Morrison did Mr. Miracle, and it wasn't the original Mr. Miracle; it was the protege
that took over. Oh, okay. Yeah, I've never read. I have one issue of Mr. Miracle. It was the special that came out in 1987. Mm-hmm. It was a one-shot special, but right. I have pre-ordered this full run of the first volume of Mr. Miracle. Mm-hmm. Like in trade, it's coming out, so I'm gonna end up reading that at some point.
But the premise is pretty crazy. Like at the first beginning of this, he's tied to a rocket in chains, and he's shot out, and you think he's dead, but of course he's not because he's Mr. Miracle. He gets out of that's his thing. Gets out of all traps, right?
Yeah.
He has Barda, Big Barda, beautiful Big Barda, who is basically. She's basically the muscle. Like, she's helping. She's the aggressive one. Like, she's saving him from attacks. Like, they're constantly getting attacked by agents for Darkseid, and that's why they have to move around a lot, which is the perfect way to do it, is be a carnival. Move around like a carny and do shows, which is something of its time, because you don't have a lot of carnivals now like that, you know, like in the old days.
Right.
But that was a big thing. Carnivals, you know, traveling circuses and carnivals was a big deal, you know, back in the day. Now you got cable. Why the hell do I need to go to a carnival when I got cable?
Yeah, exactly.
Or the internet. I can just watch a line on the internet, do some crazy stuff or whatever. But on this, it was, so he's saying they need a manager to kind of get them new shows, and they know the guy's a crook. Like, this guy is like, he wants to basically set up Mr. Miracle to die in one of these things so he can steal his money, and, you know, like, he wants to save his house. He has his mansion, and his Alfred, his butler guy, his manservant, as they say, he's just talking. He's explaining his plans to his manservant, right? And Mr. Miracle's not dumb. They know. They know he's a crook and a swine, but they're like, but we need him for now, because you need a manager to get to book these gigs. We need this so we can keep moving. And then one of the gigs that they had, one of the female Furies, which was new, by the way.
Yeah.
That wasn't this was new when they were first getting introduced like that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the thing. That's their first appearance as well.
Yeah. So when you see that, they see Big Barda fighting the Fury, and they're, you know, going back and forth with, you know, you should have never left Darkseid, and no one leaves Apocalypse alive, you know, that kind of thing. It's just that constant thing. And it's fun. I mean, it's weird. Like, Kirby, man, he can... That man throws a lot of things at the wall, man. I mean, like, he does some stuff. I know, you know, Mike loves it. Like, uh-huh. Mike is all in.
Yeah.
It's some of the stuff I could get with, and some stuff it's like, it's over my head.
Do you like Humanity or no?
I wasn't really into Commandy.
Okay, see,
like, I've read only certain issues here and there of Commandy.
Commandy was the one thing that I really liked, but I like that type of post-apocalyptic type setting where it's kind of what's happened to the world and stuff.
Right.
But even with that, it's like some of the stuff was so off the wall.
It's wild. Some of those animals and the thing. Like, it's crazy.
But it's only insane. Now that I'm starting to... Like, I actually posted that on Twitter a couple of days ago. I read the new God special that just came out.
Right.
And I'm like, it's only now that I'm actually starting to get interested in the Fourth World stuff, because the little bit that I read before, like, I really haven't read much, but I read a couple, like, the Jimmy Olsen, when all that stuff was in there, and it was just so weird and bizarre that I couldn't appreciate it at the time.
Yeah, when they first collected the Fourth World books the first time, I happened to be working for the library at the time then, too. And so I had access to the book. So I said, you know what? I'm going to read them. You know, like, it's got DC characters. I love DC characters. So why not? Just read it. It's history, right? Check it out.
Sure.
And I read it. I read all of them. It was insanity. Like, I was like, like, he doesn't care. It's like he throws all the crazy, wild, over-the-top, like, stuff at the wall. Like, and Morrison's like that, too. Like, how he could be a turn-off to people,
yeah.
too. If you don't, like, when people say they don't like his writing and or certain things he does, because he does the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't care if you don't get it or not. It's just, it's not his worry. His thing is, I'm going to take an idea, comes to my brain, and I'm going to go crazy with it. And I'm going to have a good time with it. And that's, you know, Kirby did the same thing. Yeah. That's his deal.
Well, I think Kirby might have been doing some serious drugs at the time with some of those.
Even though he comes off as a very, when people talk about Kirby, he comes off as a very straight-laced
yes.
family dude,
yes.
9-to-5 guy. But I still think he got that good weed.
Oh, he had to have with some of these.
The stuff he came out with, it's like, you got that good weed. Like, you know, like, them strains where it was really to the point where it was so potent and strong that it could really bring your mind in some places.
Yeah.
That, because Morrison's like, I have done the drugs.
Yes, exactly.
I have done the mushrooms. I have done the, like, he doesn't even try to, like, not even like, no, I just brought it out of my mind. No, I opened my mind with chakras and weed
right.
and angel dust and whatever else a millionaire can get their hands on when you're a millionaire at like 20-something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So everything about it is crazy, and I look forward to seeing how Tom takes it. Because I like when other writers kind of come in, because it's like Kirby doesn't have any structure,
mm-hmm.
right? Like he's outside the lines.
Yeah.
He doesn't color in the lines. I kind of like when a writer can come in and take the best things of something and craft it and kind of develop it and kind of, because I like, that's how I liked Orion. Like when Walt Simonson came in and took Orion, and it wasn't like he took it and just said, I'm ignoring everything that Kirby did. He didn't do that. He took it, and he pretty much cleaned him up. You know, like, he streamlined it, he cleaned him up, polished it.
Yep.
And I understood Orion a lot more than I ever did before, and it made me like Orion a lot.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you with those types of writers that can actually honor what was done in the past,
but
update it for, you know, a modern reader.
Yeah, so that's what got me into reading this one back in the day, just to see how Mr. Miracle was from his original incarnation, because it was a long time. I didn't remember that stuff, so I just wanted to see how he was. So I look forward to reading more of the of what Tom is going to do with it, too. Because that inspires you to read old stuff, too.
Absolutely, I mean, sure
does. You read the new stuff, you read the old stuff, and you play around with it.
And it's nice, it's not just like a 4-issue series that he's actually getting it for 12 issues. So he's got plenty of time to, you know, do a lot of
stuff. Flesh it out the way he wants to, and he knows it's not going to be canceled out from under him. He doesn't have to worry about that.
Exactly.
He knows he's going to be able to tell that complete story. And, you know, you don't like it, you don't like it, you like it, you like it. Like, you put it out there, that's your interpretation of what you think, you know, Kirby was meant or what he was doing. And I kind of like that those religious overtones and the whole thing with not just cheating everything, but cheating death as well. I mean, because that's what he did. He laughed at death.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, which is crazy. I mean, and you can't not but see the religious undertones of he was sacrificed.
Oh yeah,
to save a world.
Right.
Like, he was sacrificed to save a people.
Yeah,
like he to exchange. Like he basically was like, I'm gonna give you an angel in exchange for a demon.
Right.
And I'm gonna raise an angel in hell, and you raise a demon in heaven.
Exactly.
I mean, that's freaking amazing, right?
Yeah.
Like that, and I've never seen anyone deal with those religious undertones before. But I want to see that. I want to see how that's like. Because how is it like to take a boy of shining light and throw him in the deepest, darkest parts of the world, like, of any world?
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm out really of that? Looking forward to
like, and not only does he do that and escape, but he makes a woman, he inspires a woman who also, she never was born in light. She came out of darkness, but you inspired this woman so much, she fell in love with you.
Yeah.
To the point where she gave up everything.
Yeah.
To save you. I mean, that's a love story right there in itself. I mean, and for you, like, it's got to be, like, to be born out of that, there has to be some things that were done to you. There had to be some things you have to deal with. Like, you kind of see that. Like, he's always running. Like, that's even in this first issue, like, the first run. He's always running. You can't rest. There's no rest for Mr. Miracle or Barta. You're not allowed to be a happy, loving, you know, a calm, safe family, because hell doesn't let you go. Like, they still want you. So you have to constantly cheat death. And on top of being chased by hell, you put yourself in a position where you're constantly having to cheat death on your own anyway.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of that's some deep shit in your psychosis. Is that what you want to do? Like, every day you think of ways to almost kill yourself so that you can escape it. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Insane.
Pretty cool.
That's good weed.
Yeah, and that just, like you said, I mean, it kind of speaks to what Kirby started.
Next, yeah.
And then, you know.
Like, to constantly do that. Like, oh, a dude that cheats death. A dude that's thrown into hell. And then on Orion's side, you know, like, to have I would love if Tom would do an Orion book.
Mm-hmm.
To explain his side of it. Because you got a dude who came from hell. He's looked at as a monster. He thinks he's a monster inside. He really doesn't look like a monster, but he thinks he's a monster inside. Because the damage done to him already.
Right.
And to be in heaven and not think he belongs in heaven. And even though all the things you do, like all the things he's done, the heroic, kind things he's done on top of, you know, being a savage and, you know, fighting in a war, you got to do some things. But all on top of that, still thinks he doesn't deserve to be in heaven. So there has to be a constant self-loathing in there.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You don't think you deserve this peace, this happiness. You don't think you deserve to be in this place of kindness. How do you even look at Mr. Miracle and not feel guilt?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This kid, that this dude's childhood was fucked.
Big time.
And yours was great because you got to be in a good place and be raised by someone who loved you,
right,
and loving and all that shit.
And to
he
feel
got
like
shit.
Right, and feel like, well, I didn't do anything to deserve it. That
didn't he, all he did was be born.
Right.
All you did was be born Darkseid's son. That's all you did.
Right.
Like, goddamn, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's, yeah. When you really stop and think about the themes, it really is. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, love it.
And you know, just because you mentioned Tom King doing Mr. Miracle, I happen to have seen, I think he tweeted or something that he had a, I don't know if it was just an idea. It might have been just nothing more than an idea or whatever for a Sergeant Rock story. And I'm like,
God,
that would, because I love those old, primarily, like, I remember them from the 80s, you know, because they were still around when I was buying comic books at the drugstore or whatever. But
well, he could do it.
I would love to see something.
The military. Yeah, it'd be perfect for him to do it, because I don't know how many people who are actually in the military have ever written a Sergeant Rock book before. I'd have to think about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have.
Oh my God, how am I not knowing his name? The creator of Sergeant Rock.
Kaniger? Or Joe Kubert.
Well, who worked on it? Kubert, didn't he? Wasn't he
I think he was.
Serve?
Yeah, I think he was.
Right. So I'm saying, besides him, I don't think there's anyone else who's, you know, worked on that, who's actually knows what it's like to be in a situation, a in the military and have to deal with that.
Yeah,
for real.
You might be right. It would be super. I mean, I would love to see, even if it was just a one shot. You know, I would love to see something more than that, but even if it was nothing but a one shot.
Yeah. I'd be good with, I think with Sergeant Rocky's a hard sell. Army books are a hard sell.
My God.
Books are hard.
Yeah, you're not
going to sell that.
Yeah.
You're not gonna get a big numbers for that, but I think. But what's also good about it is that you could tell one issue stories with it,
mm-hmm.
because they're missions. You go on a mission, you come out, right? So, I think it'd be cool to kind of have something like that, you know, like a one issue type of thing every now and then.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I'd love that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see that. Oh. That's easy to jump into.
Big time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I only have a few minutes because I only have one more.
Yeah, I ain't in a hurry. I'm good. Yeah,
all right. So what I did was, this weekend this whole week I was on vacation and I went to the one store that has boxes upon boxes of 50 Cent comics.
Mm.
And you know, just because I've been collecting for so long, sometimes there's not that much that I either am interested in or I don't already have, but.
Right. You just got ready to explain the book. Like you,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, you just got in the presentation, and then it.
All right, so
you. Okay.
So basically, what I found was the number one issues for Hardware, Icon, and Blood Syndicate from Miles. You know the Milestone imprint for DC.
You're talking about my loves here. Go ahead.
Static Shock was one too. Is that right or no?
Which one?
Static Shock, one of them
yes.
as well.
Static Shock, yeah. He was the Spider-Man.
That.
He was the Spider-Man of that.
Right, I mean, that was the, you know, I mean, hell, like I said, that was the only one I bought right off the stands at the time.
Yeah.
It just, the entire, like, everything about it just looked interesting off the bat.
So good, so good.
So what I read today, this morning, actually, was Hardware number one.
Oh, that was my...
So,
that's the first Milestone book I ever bought.
It looks like, from reading the back, that is the first Milestone.
Yeah, it was.
Because it said, okay, this is our first letter columns ever, and, you know, it was just explained, you know, a little bit about it. But this was a great first issue.
Uh-huh.
It was by Dwayne McDuffie was the writer, and Dennis Cole was the penciler. And, I mean, I'm telling you, like, right from the start, it basically... It highlights an individual named Curtis Metcalf, who basically was mentored by an older gentleman who, let's see, I think his last name was Alva. I don't remember his first name. They found that he was very intelligent, and they kind of put him, he funded to put him in, you know, like a fancy private school for for like high school and so forth.
Right.
And I remember. Okay, here it is. And so he had won his what he'd done at a science fair. And so this Edwin Alva had seen that and then said, okay, you know, let's enroll him in a elite prep school. So he did that. He graduated at 14. Got his first degree from college at 15 and got six more after that.
Right.
And so.
Paid for it. Alva paid for it all.
Yeah, Alva paid for all.
Right.
On the, you know, and the only thing that basically what with the understanding that Metcalf would work for him upon graduating.
Right.
So sure enough, that's what he's been doing. And, everyone in the office basically just assumes that he's being groomed to take over from Alva when, you know, Alva steps down at some point because he's an old man now. And so he goes to meet with Alva just to even talk to him about, you know, he's coming up with all these crazy inventions and everything. And, I mean, the majority of the money that's coming into this to Alva's corporation is due to what Metcalf is actually inventing at this point.
Right.
So he's like, you know, I need to meet with him to at least, you know, get a share in the actual profits, you know, to get some royalty points, he says. So he sits down and the first thing Alba says to him, he's like, Curtis, let's dispense with any misconceptions. You are not family. You're an employee. Mm-hmm. You're not an heir apparent. You're a cog in the machine, my machine.
Yeah.
And he even says you're not respected.
No.
A little over the top. You're
not
respected.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, just talk about going out of your way to be insulting.
And put in the racial context of it.
Exactly.
Because he was a child of color. Yeah, to put that in there where he thought, I finally earned the
respect.
Yes,
because he talks about a glass ceiling a lot at the beginning of the
book.
Yeah. And to see that not only is he not thinking of me like any type of a colleague, but he's coming right out and saying that he doesn't respect me.
Yeah.
Which it's like, what is going on here? So, you know, so Curtis, he has this whole entire lab that's dedicated to all of basically anything that he wants to do in this corporation, but unbeknownst to Alva, he's, you know, set up all this other area that nobody even knows about.
Right.
And he basically has created this hardware suit that does all sorts of things.
Oh,
and
I love, man. It was,
it's
like
super
a mesh of like, it had all black as the basic. Like it was like you put on this black over the suit over you, and then you attach things. You kind of put a harness on and attach weapons and things and gadgets to the harnesses.
Yes. And I love how, at least in the first issue, I'm assuming it's going to continue, that they, as you're seeing it, it actually highlights, in computer type, saying what he's now adding to the actual suit for this particular timeout.
Right.
It's super, super cool.
It's so good. It's like Iron Man used to be, like, more of, like, you know, he would build certain things he needed in fights.
Yeah, for the mission or whatever.
That you could tell that these were fans who read those comics and were like, let's do that. Let's do that with ours.
Yeah, so he ends up finding that he was going to look for a few things to try to blackmail Alva with, like tax returns or something like that. But he doesn't find anything like that. He finds that Alva is like all the way deep in like a lot of illegal activity.
This dude is Lex Luthor.
He's Lex Luthor.
He's like a Lex Luthor.
He's Lex Luthor in terms of, you know, on the technology side, mm-hmm. on how he has his fingers deep in all of the illegal activity going around the city, the state, the country. And he has all these politicians in his pocket as well.
Oh, yeah.
So rather than doing any type of blackmail, where actually it does say that he tried to publicize some information about Alva, and it, like, literally there was not any, like, he, like, anonymously, like, put tips out and stuff for the media and, you know, all different politicians from the FBI all the way down to, like, a local level. And literally nothing came out in the news about it.
No, because everybody's in the pockets.
Exactly. So he's like, all right. So he decided to use this suit that he's created to actually go up against him and stop Alva in all of his dealings, and that he's been doing this for a little bit. And, you know, it just gets started where the very end of this first issue is he comes up against somebody that's been hired to kill him. And so then that's, you know, as far as it went here. But, I mean, I'm telling you, I got it. At some point, I'm going to go back there. I don't know if they have a majority of the issues or not, but I did see quite a few other issues there.
I love
so
it.
Definitely going to have
it. I love world. I love new worlds. Like,
yeah.
I love new, you know, new superhero worlds. Like, that's why I liked Valiant. That's why I liked Malibu. Like, that attracts me to see it from the ground up. Like, you get to see these new worlds built.
Oh, yeah. When this came out at the time, it was this issue. The first issue came out in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually still would have been working at a supermarket at that point. That was my problem, is that I was already collecting what I could afford to collect.
Right.
And I wasn't in the position where as appealing as it is to have a new type of like universe, it's not like I would want to just buy one particular title from
no.
I kind of would want to dip my toe into, if it was only four titles or five titles, want to get them all, but I didn't have the money to
right.
So I didn't buy like really any Malibu. I didn't buy any Milestone. I did buy a little bit of Valiant back in the day, but you know, now it's like it's so fascinating. And yeah. And I mean, if there's a, they're overdue. Especially since November. It's been before this, even since November, it's well past time to have this universe come back out.
That's the problem. It's so bad. It's such. First, it's the creators, the whole behind the scenes shit that's going on with, even the insider shit I know, it's a fucking mess. There are people claiming others took money. They're claiming that others didn't get money that was due. Dwayne McDuffie's widow is suing.
I saw that.
The creators of Milestone, some of the creators of Milestone are saying DC stole money or rights or whatever. So it's like, plain and simple, all this infighting about this will make sure that this never comes
back out.
Light. Because imagine if you had put out, like with all the things going on right now, imagine if you had collected and started putting out, which was supposed to be the plan, right? Even before Rebirth, there was supposed to be a plan of collecting all of the first year worth of the first wave of books. And that Icon, Static, Hardware, the one with the gangs.
The Blood Syndicate?
Blood Syndicate. And they were going to put those all out, right? Digitally and trade it. And then see what the response is, right?
Yeah.
And that because of all the mess going on, the only thing you get to see is Static is going to be in the new Young Justice cartoon that's going to be on that DC app or whatever.
I mean, that app looks interesting just because I'm...
So he is going to be on that team. So, which is weird to me. It's like they can deal with Static and they can't have Icon and stuff in the cartoon, but not in the comics anymore. I don't know what's going on.
Why is that?
Until they get this stuff cleaned out, I guess maybe if you put it in the comics, if we lose a lawsuit or something, we would have to pull everything out, and we're not going to do that. So maybe that, and like DC doesn't have to do anything with Milestone anyway. That's the thing. Like DC could just not do anything and just keep doing the books they're doing.
Sure.
But the creators, it's like, it's sad that, you know, like they can't work their stuff out with each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because there is money to be had with these characters. I mean, you know.
Oh, for sure.
TV, movies, comics. I mean, there's just so much you could have done with this. It saddens me every time.
It's just culturally, it's more important than it's been in a while to get a lot of diversity out there and make it so it's not that it's not a big deal or that it's not unusual to see. Right. You know what I mean? The more it becomes normal to see a lot of diversity, the better off I think, you know, we're gonna be as a country.
Well, that's why I want Lion Forge to succeed.
Yeah.
Like, Lion Forge is kind of, that's what he wants to do. That's what Joseph Eldridge, he comes from this. He comes from Milestone. He was reading it like I was. He was, you know, he was loving these books like we were when we were kids, right, reading this stuff. He wants, that's what he's trying to do with the books he's doing now. You know, with Noble and bunch of other books that are coming out slowly.
Like, did you read Superb number one?
Yes.
Oh my god, it was so good.
Yeah. So I'm rooting. I'm rooting for them to succeed. I want this universe to work. Because I'm digging the book so far, especially Noble. The first one was a strong beginning.
Yeah, I feel like it started getting a little slow. Like they could have probably made it a little move the story on a little faster than they have so far, but I still am enjoying it quite a bit. So I don't have any big complaint about it. It's just not moving quite as quickly as I wanted it to, But so that Superb number one, I just absolutely.
So I would say check out Catalyst Prime. Look for that. Those Catalyst Prime books.
Absolutely.
Because there's Noble so far, Superb. What was the one with the Speedster? Excel,
yeah.
And there are a bunch of others coming.
There's more coming.
Yeah,
they're rolling them out slowly, which is probably smart.
Yeah, and the one thing I wish that they would do is I wish they had a better website.
Oh, I haven't even tried.
You need a better website for the Catalyst Prime stuff because you want people to be able to go, well, let me see what's out. You know, let me see what you've done so far so I can find it. So I can go and look and find it for myself. They don't have, like, a place you can go to unless you go on Twitter. You can go on Twitter or you can follow Joseph on his Facebook. And he advertises all the time. But I think especially every new publisher, every new universe, you need a good, easy-to-access website.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
That's quick.
Yeah.
And if I go to a comic shop, I can look at this thing really quick on my phone or my whatever app I'm using, find what I want, and then go to the store and say, I want this book.
Yeah.
Where is it?
That's a really good point. I just did a search for Catalyst Prime, like nothing's coming up except for, like you said, like if it's mentions on Twitter or what have you, or Facebook. Mm-hmm. But then you go on Lionforge and it's all over the front page of their thing, which is great.
Right.
But if you're not familiar with Lionforge, looking up Catalyst Prime, it's not linking you to what you want it to link to.
Right.
So they kind of should have that as a website option.
They should.
So
go
right there.
Yeah. Like Valiant. Like Valiant has a easy to access. I could look at a list of what's coming out this month. I like how they did the new website. You could click on the month and go, this is what's shipping to this month of our work.
Yeah.
Easy. Boom. That's all I need to know.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I hope they get that together soon.
Yeah, so, anyhow, I mean, I thought that this was... I didn't know what to expect, but I thought this first issue of Hardware was great.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I want to read more, so...
Glad you like it.
Even if I just, you know, get them... Hopefully, I can get them digitally, even if I can't find them. Then
I wish they had it. Like, I, as a digital man, I want these things so I can put them on my iPad.
They
I'm
don't have them digitally?
You.
I
no.
can't. How am I going to... I'm going to have to find what I can find in these 50 seconds.
That's the sad part about it.
Much as I can find.
They were supposed to do that. That's what's so sad about it. They were supposed to set this whole thing up. Like, I think it was, like, 2 years ago. DC had a thing. One of the cons, they had a thing about it. They were talking about Milestones coming back. We're going to do new material and we're going to trade old material.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to, and part of the deal was they were going to take the first 12 of each of those books we named and collect them, put them out in comic shops, and make them available digitally.
Yeah.
And then nothing. You heard nothing for like a couple of years. Like, and then you hear the infighting crap, and then you hear the suing each other, and the every now and then you'll see something online about, you know, one suing this or one a person at a con, at a panel or something saying, you know, that this is why Milestone's not happening, and blah, 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 blah. So it's just like, I don't even know what to believe or what's the, you know, like, what the hell's going on? So either way, you know, you ain't getting anything new or any collected editions for you to get. You're not getting them right now.
That sucks.
Yeah, totally.
Well, like I said, I mean, there's quite a few I can go back to that store and get for 50 cents, which is obviously great. But it's not like they have... I mean, these runs are not 12 issues or 20 issues. They're like 50 issues.
Yeah.
So I know they don't. It's not going to be a complete run that I'm going to be able to find.
Nope. You're going to have a hard time. You might find some here and there, but you're going to. It'll be. If you enjoy the journey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It'll be fun to
find it. Yeah.
Because not only that, but they're not. It's nice that those are ones that you can always be on the lookout.
Right.
That you don't have to spend a lot of money to pick up.
Right.
So, yeah, right. Absolutely. All right. Well, I think that's about it. If at this point, I'd probably have to go help my wife out with the kids. So.
Yeah, I have to recover, and I have to watch something to record another show. Yeah, I'm fighting a freaking cold, too.
Oh, God.
On top of that. So that's fun when you have a cold in the summertime. That's
yeah, fun. I know. It's the worst.
Yeah.
It's fun. Well, Daryl, thanks a lot for joining me, and I'm glad Paul was able to come on and talk about X-Men a little bit, too.
Yeah, I always have fun talking comics, period. Even yeah, old awesome. Or new. I mean,
exactly.
It doesn't matter. It's fun shit.
Yep. So, will you be able to send that to Michael?
Yeah, I'll email him both things and tell him, you know, he'll have to, I know he hates to edit, but he'll have to slice these two parts together.
Yeah, since we lost. Yeah, that was weird.
But, you know, I'll send it to him. He'll get it. When, by the time he gets home, he'll have them waiting for him. I'll text him too, let him know that.
And what software is it that you use?
My recorder is the MP3 Skype recorder.
All right, I think that's
awesome. That's what I use, too. And it's free.
All right, because I probably need to get on that.
It's the one that's working the best for me right now. I had another one, but they jacked it up so bad. Every time they do a upgrade on the Skype, it totally fucks with the recorder. So it messed it up, and that's why I had to do this. So it's good so far. The only thing is. When it records an MP3, it records separate tracks, mm-hmm. So you have to combine it yourself. But you could do that with Audacity. Does that in a second? You just pick the mono, split it to combine it back, and it'll combine the audio back again.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's nothing.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because I probably need to get some stuff on here since. You know, I can't always rely on Mike to be doing it all the time.
Yeah, he's the only one with the recorder, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Chris has it too.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's bad enough with the other show he does with that that Bill guy. He refuses to be of any help.
No, not at all. Well, I think he does have a reel-to-reel that he puts next to his microphone.
That just records... that type of sound. It can't help anybody. What exactly. No help whatsoever. He refuses to be any help.
That's it.
To mic at all. He refuses. He refuses. But, you know, but here, you want to be helpful. I know Rob and Chris, they're helpful.
I'm trying.
On Retro.
Absolutely.
But that guy on that Geek Brunch, that
he just showed. He shows up 10 minutes
he just
late.
He shows up, yells at his children, and you know,
yeah,
just walks off and does his thing.
Yeah, all of a sudden Mike's talking to nobody because
I gotta yell at some kids.
Yeah.
You know, Diva, I tell you, no help. No help to Mike. None.
Oh, too funny. Well, thank you very much, Daryl. I really appreciate you joining. And, And when you guys do Kingdom Come, definitely keep in mind.
Did I tell you the date?
That
is going to be the date. That will be the date.
I just read it a couple of years ago, but I'm anxious to read it again prior to that.
And I did not cheat. Those are the votes. I tallied the votes. There was no tampering. Okay, Mike, you just have to get over it.
Right.
Stop crying about it.
That's what happens, you know.
You're a loser, just accept the loss like everybody else. You might win next time. We don't always. I just won for the first time last week. Last book was Russ won. His pick won.
What was that one? Do you remember?
What was the pick we did? Hush, I think.
Oh, Hush. Okay, that was Russ. His. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, come on. You can't. You didn't accuse him of cheating. Your own brother wins, and you accuse me of cheating.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Turn on your brother like this.
I don't know. And then he gets his wife in on it.
Yeah, his wife is texting me that they're cheating. He got the whole family on me. He said the whole family thinks I cheated.
I know.
Gosh.
I know. And he had the whole family there, too, so.
All I did was just advertise the vote. I didn't even try to sway the vote like he did.
No.
He was telling people to be on his side.
You just kept saying, don't forget to vote. You didn't tell people what
to vote.
Vote for.
That's all I did. We got 433 votes. That's a big deal. That was cool.
We can't help it if the majority of people want the best story to win.
Not my fault.
No.
Not my fault. That's just the way it was. You know? Even the writer of Identity Crisis chimed in and liked the tweet.
See?
How much help do you need? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do?
Exactly.
I didn't have Mark Wade come in. I didn't say, hey, Mark, come on over here, man. I need you to get people to vote for your pick. I didn't do that. And yet and still, I'm accused of cheating.
Yeah, but you're a cheater.
I can't believe it.
I know. It's terrible.
Alternative facts up in here. God damn it.
Things you have to live with.
I know.
Oh. All right. Well, you have a good Sunday.
You too.
All right. I'll talk to you.
All right. Take it easy.
Thanks, Joe.
All right. Later.